I am LJ, LJ Tucker, and this is my beautiful wife and business partner, Adele Tucker. This podcast that we're starting is about business, being certified arborist, and family.
How did you get started in arboriculture?
Man, that's a great question. I get that question a lot. What inspired you to get into the tree business? Because, you know, a lot of people don't know the tree business as being certified arborist. Most people don't even know what a certified arborist is. Being a certified arborist didn't excite me, and it's not the driving point that got me into this business. I was at a turning point in life, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I did some of this, I did some of that, and one day I was coming out of the mall.
What were some of the things you did?
I pressure washed people's houses, sidewalks. I did some handyman type work. I was tired of corporate America, and so I walked away from being in sales to starting my own thing without a clue what I was embarking on. And so one day, I was walking out of the mall, and I looked up and seen palm trees. And it's like a light bulb that went off, because in my mind of this industry, I can remember going out with my grandfather, and he used to, you know, teach me what he knew about it. And so when I saw the palm trees, it was like a symbol or a sign for me, because my grandfather died when I was 10. And it was sort of my background. I said, well, let me see what I can do, you know. And back then it was like, man, if I can go out and make 20, 30, 40 bucks a day, I divided my monthly expense into 30 days, that's, man, I only need to make like 40, 50 bucks a day and I can pay all of my bills. And so I would ride my biker in the neighborhoods of the city of Osmar and knock on people's doors. And probably after the 15th of 20 door, these people say, yes, I can trim their palm tree. I didn't have a saw, so I had to run up to.
So you got the sales before you got the saw.
Yes. So I got the sale and I went to get the saw, and believe it or not, this is the last $40 I had to my name. And I already had sold a job for like $75, $80. So I was doubling my money off the start. And so I went out and bought this saw, and which I still have by today, by the way. And my thing was just to make enough money to pay the bills. And it wasn't about the education of the trees. It wasn't about really knowing my craft or what it was doing. I was just chasing a paycheck. That was it. It was like there was nothing, no aha moment. Oh, I want to be the best certified arborist and build this big company to make a lot of money. I needed a check, and I needed to do what I had to do to get a check. And so from that was my start. It wasn't an aha moment that, oh, I can really change this industry. I can be something on that. So that's my introduction to arboriculture. It's just,
I jumped in feet first.
Jumped in feet first is like, hey, I want to pay my bills.
When did you realize that you needed to hire help to help you with the business and, you know, the work that you were doing?
Probably a few months or so in, I realized that, man, this is hard work dragging these limbs and putting them on a trailer on the trunk of my car by myself. And so I realized that I needed help. So I got help. It wasn't the best help, but it taught me, you know, later on down the road what to look out for and how to bring people in, because you think family and friends is the key, and that's the route that I went. But it taught me that in business, it costs you more money bringing in family and friends, especially at the start of any business, unless if they're a professional in that field and they're going to really bring something to the table that's going to help you grow. Because what happens, you bring in family and friends, and you're going to overpay them, and you're always trying to stroke their ego. You're going to walk on eggshells at some points, or you're going to bump heads all the time. And the reason that's going to happen, because you're more concerned with their feelings and they don't get hurt and you're trying to keep them happy instead of getting the right people on the board to do things the right way, and you inspire and push each other to grow versus it being a one-sided affair. Because when that happens, it's like you're not running a business, you're just like running to make sure that you make this person happy, because they may or may, and most likely didn't leave no significantly paying job where they're giving up a lot to come work with you. They're just trying to take advantage because they know they can prey on your emotions because they, you don't want to make them upset or something. And so if they, you know, so my advice to anyone, if you know you're starting a business or trying to start a business, unless of that family or friend is a professional in the industry that you go into and really know that industry, don't do it. It's a waste of time, it's a waste of resources, and it's not going to help you grow. And I'm speaking from experience. I'm speaking for over 20 years of experience. Consistency is the way to grow. And going through different employees, and I can't even, I'm going to just call it help. And the reason why I'm going to call it help, because the way I used to hire people, I always hired people that was looking for a job, or, and I grew to find out they just looking for one or two checks and they're gone anyway. So if you're not willing to spend the time to vet an employee or a person of interest that's looking to grow and take care of their family and learn, it's a waste of time and resources. And if you don't spend the time, again, to vet, background checks to see who you're dealing with before you bring them in, you're going to find out real quick that you just wasted, whether it's 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 minutes of your time is valuable, so you can't afford to bring in the wrong people.
Do you have an example of maybe someone that you brought on and then later on you found out, man, I should have done my research, I should have done my homework?
Here's the example. I have a rule, and I call it the BD rule. I won't mention this person by name, but there was a friend of a family, and they become friends, so they filled out an application. And because you knew that person and you knew the family, you didn't do your due diligence. You didn't read the application. Because when you read people's application, they're telling you any and everything that you need to know. And it was right there in clear writing that this person wasn't qualified. And I brought them in anyway because of the contact, and I knew the person and they needed a job. So I didn't do my homework and I brought this person in, and I learned my lesson. That won't be happening again. And it was that there was so many moments. You know, they have a saying, at that moment he realized he made a mistake. Well, there were so many moments that I knew I made a mistake, but because it was a friend of a friend to the family, you turned the other cheek, and then you turned the other cheek, and you dealt with a lot of things that you had no business dealing with it. And it just was a financial strain and cost at the end of the day. So again, we don't make those type of mistakes anymore.
So we know business has its ups and its downs. Can you share a failure or a down time in a business, something?
Failure is a part of life. Failure is a part of business. And if you don't fail, then you can't grow. And that brings me back to 2007. July 13th, 2007, happened to be Friday the 13th, and that changed everything for me. That's the day that I got electrocuted out of Indian Rocks Beach, Florida. And that day is very significant because it's a day I can't forget. We just regular day at the office that nearly cost me my life. And I got the scars to prove it. The electricity blew out these four fingers in my shoulder. I just cleared 40 feet of tree debris from a bird cage that was, you know, you had the power lines on one side and then you had the bird cage. And so I had to climb, and I cleared this whole section of tree debris when the electricity grabbed me. And that was the day that started taking this business serious. It was the day that I started really deep diving to educate myself, because I knew at that moment, if I didn't, that I wasn't going to be around much longer, because I shouldn't have been within 10 feet of those lines.
So that's what you learned that day.
Yeah, I shouldn't have been within 10 feet of those lines. And that's what made me become a certified arborist. That's what made me start picking up more books to read and educate myself in this field, so I don't make a costly the ultimate mistake. And, you know, everybody don't get that lucky, because they said, you know, when you come in contact with that type of electricity, it's normally fatal and it's deadly. And the fact that I'm here talking about it today in 2023, it turned that light on inside that I have work to do and I need to take it serious, regardless of what I'm doing, but especially what I was doing. And so for me, that's the turning point. Knowing your craft, though, you know, it's at a point now, it turned the switch in the table for me at a point. It's like, if somebody's going to pay me their hard-earned money, then I owe them the respect of learning my craft so I can earn it. Because if you don't know what you're doing and you're charging somebody, that's theft, that's stealing. You're just trying to get by. And there's no, for me, that's unacceptable. I hold myself to a higher standard than that. So it can be about the money for you or somebody else, but for me, I want to know that I did the homework, I put in the time to earn the money that I'm being paid by learning my craft. I owe that to myself and I owe that to the customer. So Dell, we have the successful business and God has blessed us to do really well, but we have five children.
And we have five children.
So for you, tell us how that balance works with business and family with five kids, three boys and two girls. Two little boys is very active. So how did that balance come in?
It is, it's a lot. It's a balancing act. So there's a lot of times that, you know, I'm not going to say I'm a single parent because obviously I'm married, but, you know, I do handle a lot of things on my own at the house because you are, you know, working, taking care of things, finishing up jobs. You know, like we said, when you're a business owner, you're not just the worker, you know, you're the salesperson, you are the repair maintenance person, you are a lot of different things. So, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, so there's, you know, there's a give and take. So I understand that, and it's not easy, but it's what needs to happen so that the business can continue to run and go. So it's a balancing act.
Balancing act. This is, you know, and as your husband, I'm very thankful for choosing a partner like you. Because I know I appreciate everything you do. Because you do the things that I can't do, I can't do them per se, but you fill in that gap, like getting the kids to the different events they need to be at, and just making sure that they have what they need for lunches. You do the paperwork for the office and for the home, especially when the kids go to school. So I'm very appreciative of that. Everybody, we both play our roles. We play our roles, and, you know, you do what I don't do, I do what you don't do, and I think that's the measure in what makes us successful, because we consistently do it. There's times that it's like, man, I don't feel like doing such and such a day. I just want to stay home and go to the park with the kids or something, but I understand that I can just make that decision, but part of the consistency to be successful is to be consistent. So I'm grateful that I do have a presence in our kids' life. I try to be the best father that I can. And it's that, again, that balance is everything. And it takes two. You got to have a partner. And I think God blessed me with a good partner in you to make everything that we do work.
So what are some habits, routines that as a business owner you feel have contributed to your success?
Some success habits is, I guess that's what contributed to me becoming a certified arborist. It's funny because when, you know, before I became certified, you know, you got an educational process and you're trying to learn what it is you should be doing and how you do it. Because customers, man, you go out to do a simple tree job and then you got the customer out, this little old little lady, she out, she's the director. No, you agreed to cut this limb. And then they hit you with the ultimate. Oh, I'm not going to pay you unless you hit that limb. And because we go back being uneducated, you don't know what you're doing out there anyway, you ain't got no comeback. So you're just chopping this tree up, you're destroying this tree, you're butchering this tree.
Based on what the customer is saying they want.
Based on what the customer want. And then they threaten you with the payment if you don't cut the limb that you want. And there's no comeback because you're not educated enough to come back to tell the lady, listen, we're not taking more than 20% of the canopy because that's what the ISA says. So that's just in itself, knowing what to say and how to say it by knowing your craft. Because these customers will have you out there almost cutting the whole tree down for a couple dollars. And you come out, you go to the dump, and you paying more at the dump than you got paid for the entire job because you didn't know. I didn't know. I'm sorry to the tree world that all the trees I butchered in the past before I became educated. And so I can go on and on. There's just so many stories of just, you know, being able to diagnose stuff in the tree industry just by knowing your craft, to see a potential hazard to somebody's house just by knowing your craft. And which is sad and unfortunate. We live in a state, I can't speak for other state, that it doesn't really require a license to be in the tree industry. And I was one of those people with a pickup truck and a trailer when I started out. And I didn't know my craft, so because it's not regulated. Now, you do have to be registered as a registered agent with different cities and county municipalities, and hopefully one day we can change that narrative. The highest requirement that separates you in this industry is being a certified arborist. And we live in a city of Oldsmar. You don't have to take my word for it. Go to the ISA and look for a certified arborist near me, or pick the city. Pick the city of Oldsmar. I challenge you to do that. Go to the ISA's website and pick the city of Oldsmar, and you'll see three certified arborists in the city of Oldsmar. And you're looking at two of the three right here. You go to the city of Clearwater, and there's like, the biggest city of Clearwater is like 19 certified arborists in the city of Clearwater. Look at the city of St. Pete, there's like 24. You look in the city of Tampa, Tampa is like the biggest city in the Tampa Bay area. And I want to say there's like 22 certified arborists on record in that big old city. That's insane. The city of St. Pete has one more certified arborist in their city than the city of Tampa. I just think that it's sad for my industry, because there should be more certified arborists with the amount of tree guys you have running around with a pickup truck just whacking on people's trees. And so it's sad when you look at a tree that's been butchered because...
A question that we get a lot of times from customers when it comes to tree removals is, do I have to replace a tree? Can you talk about why sometimes there are... requirements for replacing a tree, not replacing a tree?
Well, you have city ordinances, and each city and county is very different, which is, I think it should be universal across the board. Like, being a certified arborist is just not here in the state of Florida or in the city of Osmar. It's worldwide, it's international. So being a certified arborist, if I decide I want to move to Hong Kong or Italy or anywhere, it's the same credentials across the board. Now, city ordinances are different. So I'll give an example. In the city of Osmar, pine trees are not protected. You go across the street to Safety Harbor or Dunedin or Clearwater, pine trees are protected and you need a permit. That's the different contrast. And everybody don't understand why you need a permit for trees, because trees are very good for the environment. They're good for our oxygen. There's so many health benefits for trees, so you just don't want to go cut them down. And again, this is a reason to be educated, because then you'll know the difference if a tree even has to come out. Is it a candidate for removal? So there's difference. You have trees that are candidates for removals, and then you have trees that are in decline, and then you just have trees that's just flat out hazardous and needs to come out. Question for you, tell us something about the ISA when it comes to their requirements.
When it comes to pruning, you should not take more than 20 to 25% of a tree, of the canopy of the tree. So a lot of times if customers have a tree that hasn't been pruned in a long time, they may have expectations of how they would like the tree to be pruned. So maybe we can't get to their expectations in the first trip. We may have to, you know, do an initial prune and then come back and prune a little bit more, depending on, you know, what, you know, how much needs to be removed, how much deadwood there is in the tree. It's very, you know, subjective, but the ISA does have guidelines that you shouldn't take more than 20 to 25% of the canopy of the tree.
Tell us about any times dealing with customers and they say they want to speak to an arborist or something. How's your interactions with that?
It varies. I mean, we have some customers who seek us out and they see on our website that we do have certified arborists on staff. So they will say, you know, your website says you have certified arborists. Are you guys certified arborists? Yes. So, you know, they're already coming with a level of expectation that, you know, they trust you, that you know what you're doing. And some customers could care less, but we do get those that are looking for certified arborists. So that's just another reason to seek out a certified arborist, because they are going to know, you know, what is best for the tree and what, you know, different suggestions and things like that for your trees.
What's noteworthy is we do get calls from different construction companies on projects, city management on projects that's already been predetermined in the boardroom behind closed doors. This is some instance that I don't want to say the city, I don't want to put anybody on blast, but it was north of here, it's in the city. We got caught up on this project. It's about maybe 45 minutes to an hour away, and they wanted some root pruning, and they wanted them in the CRZ zone, and that stands for critical root zone. And they were putting this pond on the other side of this tree that's probably maybe 90 to 100 years old, that was in decline, had codominant limbs all over. And I thought it was a trick or something. I said, where's the camera at? And they're looking at me, what do you mean by cameras? I'm looking for somebody to come from out in the bushes or something with a camera, because this is a prank. And they were looking at me confused. I'm like, are you seriously telling me you want all the roots up to the trunk of the tree root pruned and discard it? And there's like, yeah, what's wrong with that? I said, oh, okay, you guys are not pranking me, but yeah, I'm the wrong guy for that. And they were like, what do you mean? I said, see those power lines on the other side of the street? You take out all those roots on all the roots away from that tree in the CRZ zone, and this tree is going to be hazardous. It's just going to take a little bit of water and wind, and this tree is going to tip over. And so they didn't know. So they just didn't know. And you got an engineer of a project that didn't know that you don't take those roots out of the tree. And they was, if they would have hired somebody.
So what happened? Did they?
They hired us to remove the tree. And the funniest thing about that situation, if the ordinance through the city didn't require them to have a certified arborist on board, they would have hired somebody that would have came in and pruned those roots and put other people's lives at stake because it's in public right away. And so that's important. That's one thing my hat's off when it comes to the city when they have these different ordinances on these different projects that they require a certified arborist. And sometimes they don't bring us in until after the fact. But it's important. And people that know, you know, it's funny because we have customers that's been with us from the beginning. I've had it, you know, for over the past 20 years. And you've had customers that just believed in you as a person, not as an arborist, but as a person. I remember Phyllis Berry, you know, God bless her. She passed away a few years back. She's like one of our biggest fans, and she just, she always uses us. And we still have customers that have been using us for a very, very long time. And you build those relationships, and they see you grow, and you're able to continue to educate and learn from your mistakes and just through educating yourself to becoming better at what you do.
Why don't you talk about where you started in the business physically as far as, you know, where you were working out of to where you are now, to where we are now?
I started working at the backseat of my car, my Mazda 92929, working out of my home. And we transitioned from the home to a place over in Clearwater off of Enterprise. It's my first building that we used to rent.
So in your home, you had all your equipment in the garage? Because I remember that when I came onto the scene, you were still working out of the house. So we had to park in the driveway because the mower was in the garage and all the stuff.
Yeah, so I started at 190 Douglas Road, Old Smart, Florida, right across the street from the post office. It was funny because I first started out, I didn't have anything, so everything was good. And then as soon as I got my first truck and I started parking it on the property here in Kansas City, you can't have that commercial vehicle on the property. And so I pushed the limits. I didn't know anybody. I pushed the limits until I got a notice to appear in court with the city. And they said they were going to charge me $60 a day for every day that truck is parked there. So my first storage facility was Tropicana Storage up in Palm Harbor or Clearwater. It was off of US 19. 20 years later, God has blessed us to purchase this beautiful 2-acre facility that we now own. And it came a long way from a $40 pole saw to making purchases of $40, $50, $100, $200,000 for pieces of equipment and trucks and stuff. Like, I think our biggest purchase was a truck was $350,000 for a truck. And it's like those are big investments. Those are like big steps. Those are like, should we be doing this? And you always ask yourself, is it worth the investment? I can say with no hesitations, yes. Like, once you understand your industry and what you need to succeed in your industry, it becomes easy. Like, I remember you wasn't on board when I first said, we're going to buy a building. But at the time, office was in Countryside. I had four different places that was trying to park stuff because our office space didn't have enough parking space for the few pieces of equipment that we had. And so I was always running around to get this equipment. You'll show up, you'll drive all the way across town to the storage facility thinking a tool or something is on this other truck, and it's not. It was back at the first place where you started at. So you're doing all this running around, and before you know it, you're going to run around for 2 or 3 hours before you even started your day. And by the way, you got guys that's on the clock that's getting paid for you to run around. And so I remember looking to expand, and I was looking at these rates to rent a property that's nowhere near the size that was actually able to purchase. And it just, for me, I just couldn't wrap my mind around paying $15,000 to $20,000 a month in rent. That was going to be a lot of tree trimming just to pay rent. We're not even talking about payroll, insurance, fuel, or disposal. And true story. And I remember, you remember this, when our first building on 49th Street that we put an offer in, and we put a deposit down. And for whatever reason, that deal fell through and we lost our $10,000 deposit. I remember you being devastated because you don't realize what had happened. And I remember saying to you, God had something better for us. And a week later, we found this property, and we've been here for, over 6 years now. 6 or 7 years, give or take. But we was able to buy this property, which was double the price of the original property that we tried to purchase, and the deal, for no rhyme or reason, fell through. And it was, God had a purpose and a plan. Not only is this building and this property 5 minutes from our house, it's the perfect location because we've been able to grow and add equipment since we've been here on this property. And there's still more room to grow.
So what advice do you have for any young entrepreneur or older entrepreneur, someone who's looking to start their own business?
The best advice I can give to anybody is consistency. You have to have consistency. And in order to have consistency, you have to have a foundation. And my foundation is through my faith in God, and just believing in the ability that there's nothing that you can't do. And if you have that sense of faith, or that type of faith, that there's nothing you can't do, and with creators, then there's nothing you can't do. And so there's a gift inside of you. There's a gift inside of me. Everybody has certain gifts. And you have to tap into that potential. And so that's a part, you know, as a motivational person that loves to speak and try to inspire people, my book will be complete here pretty soon, and it's titled 7,000 Volts. I'll be talking about my experiences. I invite you back to listen to me talk about my experiences. I gave you a little bit today when, back in 2007, I was electrocuted. You know, that was a big turning point in my life. But there's some other trials and tribulations that I had to deal with as well. And we're going to be talking about that on this podcast. And hopefully it can inspire, it can educate, and it can push you to your destiny.